Blog Talk Radio.
Five Lincoln 103, five Lincoln 102, Lincoln 103 and 102.
Responding to 401 parking structure, section 1 boy.
Henry 8, Henry 9, respond to gate 437 Bravo for your dignitary detail. 3K911, unattended 400 lower level near Carousel 4, black bag. GTA in progress, 401 parking structure, section 4 boy.
Responding to 401 parking structure, section 1 boy.
415 passenger onboard aircraft.
Control 2 Franklin and around.
484 suspect, is female, Hispanic, 28 years of age. Blue G, no further.
Control, high Frank, 401 is a route.
Well, good evening and welcome to another edition of the Private Officer Beat radio show, sponsored by Private Officer International, a security and law enforcement organization, and our friends over at Varney Insurance. You can check them out today if you are a security business owner, you have a contract security company, a PI business, or an alarm business. They will help you with all of your insurance needs. Check them out today on the web at www.onguardins.com or give them a call at area code 813-245-2675. Good to be with you on this cold, chilly, wet, snowy, icy, wintry evening as we get ready to head out on the road, continuing our two-day free security training summit, and we're having a good time doing these, and we hope that you'll be part of an event in your local area. If one isn't scheduled, by all means, contact our help desk at privateofficer.com and let them know that you would be interested in helping sponsor it in your area, and we'll give you all the details. But we're having a great time doing those, and look forward to meeting many more of you out on the road as we do these two-day events. A lot of training involved, workplace violence, use of force, active shooter, and much more. I'm your host for the radio show tonight, Rick McCann. I'm the founder and CEO of Private Officer International, and we are celebrating our 10th year in business, 10 years. It's not every day that a company can, you know, look you in the eye and say, I've really been in business for 10 years. You know, you see all kinds of company with claims that they've been around since 1804, 1901, and, you know, I think most of them are exaggerating just a bit. But it's good to know that there's companies that really have been in business and done the things that they say that they've done. And POI is one of those companies who have started from the ground floor up and developed our business, our company, and our growth over the years. It has not, by any stretch of the imaginations, been an easy road. But we have really enjoyed it, and especially the last couple of years, we have seen it really take off in so many different ways, and we're going to be talking more about that as the year progresses on. Now, if you're a member of POI, then you recently received an interdepartment memo, a private memo, explaining what's going on with the POI organization, what we're working on now, and where our future is headed. And if you have not received one of those, please contact the help desk at privateofficer.com. They will send you out that member-only memo that was dispatched out a few days ago. those of you not currently members, I really want to encourage you to quickly join, because we do have so many great things happening. We are definitely growing leaps and bounds in so many areas. Some folks know us as an association, but we're so much more than that. Some folks understand that we're also all about training, which of course we are. That is definitely one of the fundamental aspects of our organization. But we also have so many other areas. We are a national statistical clearinghouse, data clearinghouse for many government, federal, and state agencies. We are a news gathering organization 24/7. We're a content provider for several different businesses. We gather the information provided to them, and they use it in their distribution of news and magazines and so forth, and we're really growing that aspect of the business. There's a lot to POI, and if you're not part of it, if you're not a member, you are missing out. So check it out today at privateofficer.com. All right, well, tonight we've got a lot to talk about, just like we always do every single night, and we have really a very important topic that we want to talk about. Now, over the last couple of weeks, we've talked about the truth about tasers, and hopefully that straightened a lot of folks out about the misnomers and misinformation about tasers. We've talked about the strength in numbers and why it's important to continue to grow in an organization like ours. And we've talked about the legislative process and how it doesn't happen overnight, and if you really want to be part of it, then definitely we invite you to do that just by contacting helpdesk at privateofficer.com. But tonight, we want to talk about something that's really on the rise and something that's near and dear to my heart, because I'm involved both in the profession of law enforcement and security as well as in the EMS profession since the 1970s, and we have taken numerous courses over the years about this very subject, both in law enforcement and in EMS, but it's not discussed, as many things are not, in the private security industry. They would rather not bring it up and pretend like it's not out there, it's not real, it's not happening. But the truth of the matter is, it is. And tonight we're going to talk for the next couple of weeks about in-custody deaths and the many different things that occurs during this in-custody death. Now, for a long time, security personnel didn't really go hands-on, didn't really use force, didn't really apprehend or detain or arrest. But as we have discussed more than once, in fact more than 100 times over the last few years, private security really is getting more hands-on, more involved in investigating, responding to crimes in progress, detaining, taking suspects down by force, and unfortunately we're seeing more in-custody deaths involving not only law enforcement but also private security. And in fact, about 3 weeks ago, I guess it is now, there was an in-custody death in Michigan. And we're going to talk a little bit about that tonight. But I believe, having viewed the video a number of different times and a number of different videos and talking to some folks that witnessed it, that this was an in-custody death that did not have to happen. And we'll talk about that. But this is a subject that's very important, and it's not limited to just law enforcement. It's limited to anybody who goes hands-on, whether it be a shopkeeper who's trying to detain a shoplifter or private security trying to detain or arrest a trespasser or someone who's committed a crime on their property, or the EMS provider who's responding to the scene. We need to recognize the symptoms. We need to understand the medical aspect that goes on during an in-custody death, especially one that has to do with excited delirium. Oh, excited delirium. You say, well, what's that? Never heard of it. Sounds like somebody's excited about something. No, excited delirium is actually what we call in the medical profession an acute, critical, life-threatening emergency. And if we do not recognize it immediately, almost 100% of the time, the person loses their life. So I want to begin this series, In Custody Deaths, Part 1 tonight, with that very topic, excited delirium. And I would like for you to do your own research. This is part of an 8-hour course that we offer to law enforcement, public safety, and private security. Those of you listening tonight, if you would like to participate and receive a certificate, once you've listened to all of the series over the next couple of weeks, we will give you a short test. If you pass it, then you'll get a certificate. And, of course, we're not charging for it, as we often do not charge for training that most companies would be charging you an arm and a leg for. The 2-day training event that we have nationally goes for about $200 to $400 per person. We're giving it away free. Recognize the value of what we do and who we are and why we do what we do, and participate, be part of a great organization that is all about you if you're in the public safety or security industry. All right, that's enough about that preaching. We want to tell you tonight that you can radio, if you're listening to our radio, you can email us at any time at radio@privateofficer.com, radio@privateofficer.com. Even if you're listening tomorrow or next week or next year on demand, you can always participate by sending us an email. You can also submit your news, your training events, any promotions that you might be having, or anything else, simply by sending it to radio@privateofficer.com. A lot of times we get folks who contact us via social media, and we prefer that you not do that. If it's a business matter, please always contact us through helpdesk@privateofficer.com, helpdesk@privateofficer.com. Even though our office is not open 24/7, there is always somebody manning the help desk 24/7, 365 days a year, and we will get back with you in a short amount of time. Someone will always respond back with you and get you the appropriate contact, the appropriate information. So be sure to do that rather than contact us or message us through social media. Of course, if you're just saying hello or something, that's cool, that's fine. But if it's important, we just got a message overnight about something very important and they left it through Facebook, you know, that's just not going to cut it, because we do monitor our social media, but, you know, we're not going to be monitoring it as closely as we do our email, because the email is our primary method of communication, because we have so many members and followers and different people all around the world on different time zones, and emails just seem to work the best for us. So please remember to contact helpdesk@privateofficer.com. All right, we've had a really hectic, busy, crazy 24 hours. As most of you know, the weather, the winter weather has not gone away despite the 72-degree weather yesterday here in North Carolina and 75-degree weather yesterday in Alabama. And today in Alabama, the temperature was 32, more than 40 degrees difference. Same thing here. Right now we've got 30 degrees. Earlier today it was 60 degrees, and yesterday it was 72. Crazy weather. More than 65% of the country has been affected by this snow and ice storm that has happened over the last 24 hours. I just read today that over a million flights have been canceled or delayed this season, this winter season, more than in the last 20 years. And there's been in Virginia today tens of thousands of people without electricity. I know in Nashville and different areas they've had some issues with power outages, icy roads, and, all right, got some good news for you. The weather is going to change again tomorrow as temperatures begin to climb a little bit, and also on a Wednesday, but on Thursday, that's a different story. Thursday, we're going to be in for it again. It is winter. It is winter. Let's just, you know, calm down, I guess. It's winter. What can we expect? Spring will be here before you know it, or so they say. We're going to take a short break. We got a lot to talk about here coming up in just the next few moments.
Listening to WPOI Radio, brought to you by Private Officer International. Don't go away, because we're coming right back with more news, information, and training.
They say if you want a wish to come true, never tell anyone. But there is one wish that can make the difference between life and death. And this wish can only come true if you tell someone. Please, let your family know you want to be an organ donor.
All right, you are listening to the Private Officer Beat Radio Show here on this Monday, the 3rd of March. And March has come in roaring like a lion, winter all over the place. You know, I guess it is what it is, as they say. It's really not as bad as it could be, and it is causing emergencies for security as well as law enforcement and medical responders. So if you do have to be out there, dress appropriately, stay warm, and drink plenty of warm fluids, and, you know, be smart about being out there. Don't drive if you don't have to. Don't take any chances, and definitely be safe. All right, well, this weekend was just another continuation of last weekend with many security officers being shot or stabbed. This weekend we had a total of 11 who were shot or stabbed. We had one fatality security officer killed. And we had a number of off-duty police officers working in the security, as security officers who were involved in armed confrontations that directly involved them in shooting and killing people. And, you know, some weeks not a whole lot happens, and other weeks things do happen, and there's really no rhyme or reason. No way to explain it other than on the weekends usually is when people are out, people are moving, a lot of activity. We've got a lot of partying, bars, and people are chilling and, you know, relaxing and so on and so forth. That is one reason that it happens on the weekend, but also because more security officers work on the weekend. There's a lot of contract security across the country who work nothing but weekend. Many security companies who take special duty jobs at nightclubs and shopping centers, weekend duty, where during the week there would be no security. So there are multiple, you know, reasons and explanations why these things always happen on the weekend. And I just gave you two. But there's a lot more, and things happen, and, you know, you just need to be safe and obviously pay attention, be prepared, and don't do anything foolish. Well, we hope that you've noticed by now our brand new logo. We've worked on it for a few weeks, and we want to recognize the designer, which was me, but we want to recognize the person who helped put it together, Greg Jarman down in Florida, who also has helped us on some previous occasions. We really appreciate him, one of our lifetime members. I understand that he was also going through some illness at the time, but he soldiered through it and got this taken care of for us. So we hope that you have seen it, and if you like us or like it, then like us on Facebook or send us a message, you know, email, or just let us know that you like the design. I think that it portrays what POI really is. It has the world map on there. It has the U.S. flag. It has our organization's name, and I just think it looks pretty well. We have a lot going on, a lot of things in the news that we're going to skip tonight. We do encourage you to follow us through Twitter. It is the quickest method of communication. Anytime that there's breaking news or something happening, that's usually where we're going to be dispatching it out. You can also follow us on Facebook, of course, and we do have our own forums. I mentioned a few moments ago about the free training, two-day security training summit. We've had a lot of great response on that. We hope that you're taking advantage of that. And you can go to our website at privateofficer.com and see where the closest one to you is going to be. So much to tell you about tonight, but I really want to concentrate on our training tonight because it's really something that has been on my mind for about 3 or 4 months, and unfortunately we've discussed it with some security executive type people, and they didn't really have much to say about it, didn't really think it was a big issue. But as I was saying earlier, about 3 weeks ago, we read an article about a in-custody death that happened in Michigan. Mall security officers was called to investigate a person who seemed to be suspicious. One thing led to another, and really from what I could see, the subject was doing nothing more but loitering. The security personnel then got into a confrontation, words were exchanged, and before you know it, security had the subject on the ground. And during their tussle, they had him proned out, face down, and finally got him handcuffed. And the next thing you know, he's lost consciousness. They're calling for medical support, and the man is in cardiac arrest, being taken out of the mall, and he died. Now, we have been in touch with that mall. We have been in touch with the state representatives for Michigan, who currently they have no requirements of training for security, contract or proprietary, which is a shock because Michigan has been on the list of the most security officer deaths and injuries for the last 10 years since we started the organization. But we have been working with the state legislators since this incident, and they have drawn up some legislation and some a bill that they hope that will be passed. We help them with the language, and it will provide for training and management and training in weapons and in custody deaths and first aid and a few other things. But looking at this video several times from several different angles, I could see that the security personnel involved escalated the situation, but then didn't recognize that it went from becoming trying to detain someone who committed a very minor infraction to not being able to recognize the symptoms of in-custody death. Now, many security companies, directors, executives will tell you that we don't take people in custody. We may stop a shoplifter. We may stop a trespasser. We may detain them until police arrive, but they're not in our custody. Yes, they are. The minute that you have stopped a person and he or she is no longer free to leave, you have made a legal and technical arrest. And at that point, and from that point on, they are in your custody. That would be considered a custodial arrest. Whether you be a law enforcement officer or a private security person, in technical terms, you have made an arrest. And you are directly responsible for the care of the person in your custody, whether that person be having a heart attack, whether that person be having a drug overdose, or whatever it might be. You are responsible directly, you and you only, at that point, to ensure his safety or her safety, especially if you have them detained via handcuffs or in a vehicle, a room, or you've taken them someplace. You are 100% responsible from that moment on. And whatever happens during that time until they are either relinquished back to themselves or handed over to law enforcement or medical care, you are responsible. You're in control of that person, and anything that he needs, whether it be medical care or whatever, you're responsible for. In these in-custody deaths that we continue to see rise across the country, both from law enforcement as well as private security, a number of things happen. And usually it's the same things that happen, but we don't recognize it because we don't train for it. And we don't train for it because we don't want to acknowledge it. We don't want to say, yes, we take people in custody, because if we do that, then if something happens, we have to acknowledge it's our fault, our responsibility, our liability. And that causes a whole bunch of other things to happen. So we in the private security industry, we don't want to talk too much about that. Well, tonight I want to talk about excited delirium. I've seen police officers laugh when they get on scene and see someone acting out, because they don't recognize the urgency in this emergency. As I stated a few moments ago, in the medical field, we call this an acute life-threatening situation. And if it's not handled properly, they will die 100% of the time. Now, many people are just now beginning to talk about in-custody death and excited delirium like it's something that just happened. It just came around. It's brand new. It's not brand new. It's been going on for years and years, all the way back to, you know, LSD and drugs of that nature. Excited delirium could be caused by somebody on drugs. It could be caused by somebody who's having a mental breakdown, someone who has a drug or alcohol-induced incident. And there's a number of things that you need to watch out for. I'm going to go over a couple of them so that maybe it will help you to recognize it. But these are similar symptoms to some other medical emergencies. But if you ever get involved, get a call, and you go out to a scene and you have a person who is acting strange, they're paranoid, they're disoriented, they're hallucinating, they're incoherent, you can't understand their speech, they're hypothermia, which means overheating, profuse sweating. Even in the cold weather, they might be taking off their clothes because they're so hot. And that is a chemical reaction happening within their body. You might think they're on drugs. You might think they're on alcohol. You might think they're just whacked out. And maybe they are all of those things, but under this condition, it's a medical crisis. In-custody death and excited delirium oftentimes go hand in hand. And they're exacerbated when we restrain or use the taser or other methods to detain the person.
Superhuman strength and nearly unstoppable on bloody rampages through South Florida streets.
Two cases reported just days apart in Palm Beach County are considered by authorities as suspected excited delirium cases. Tonight, a respected brain researcher says, no question, these are textbook cases of excited delirium, and we all need to learn from them.
CBS 12's Peter Schaller is live at the Palm Beach County Medical Examiner's Office tonight, where just hours ago he was granted a very rare interview about this controversial and sometimes deadly medical syndrome. Peter?
Well, John, it's controversial because in so many of these cases, police, tasers, and guns are involved. Also, believe it or not, the medical examiner here says there's no universally accepted way to test for excited delirium in an autopsy. When 28-year-old Anessa Joseph growled at police in Delray Beach, witnesses say he was naked and hurting people with superhuman strength. Deputies shot him three times.
There's no way to know if those are the shots that actually killed him or if he's died from what they call excited delirium.
So what is excited delirium? Palm Beach County Medical Examiner Dr. Michael Bell explains the symptoms people witness.
They will smash things. They will break windows. They may attack you.
But Dr. Bell says there's no universally accepted blood test or brain test for excited delirium in an autopsy. Doctors rely on witness statements, police statements, or what Dr. Bell calls history.
But that history is so specific. It's so stereotypic that when I hear it, I'm like, it's an excited delirium.
What do you make of people that characterize as a controversial cause of death?
Well, it's not controversial. This has been around for decades, and people have died with or without police intervention.
Dr. Bell says stimulants like cocaine, meth, or bath salts can trigger it, and in many cases, there's a history of mental health issues.
This is still quite unusual.
Dr. Bell can't comment on any of the recent cases specifically, so CBS 12 asked University of Miami professor Dr. Deborah Marsh to review the cases. She said, quote, yes, these cases fit well within the known clinical features of excited delirium syndrome based on the witness reports. And Dr. Bell says the only correlation that he sees between police and excited delirium cases is the fact that when people see these symptoms in their neighborhood, they get scared. They call 911. Deadly force is usually needed to stop it. And, of course, that's where police get involved. Live in Palm Beach County, Peter Schaller, CBS.
Over the years, we have been called to incidents of people acting out, acting crazy, acting like they're high on drugs and tripping, smashing out windows, yelling, talking to themselves, stripping naked in the middle of the street. This is nothing new. It has been going on for a long, long time. And many times it's associated with drug abuse. Through the years, it's been different types of drugs, but nonetheless, drug-induced or mental illness or a combination of all of those. And yet, if we don't recognize who it is that we're dealing with on any given call, and we begin to use force against this person, they're going to fight with extra human strength. Check out any of your local news headlines. Watch any of your local news. You will see this happening more and more frequently. That's what people don't understand when they see police pulling out their taser or shooting someone who wasn't armed. They don't have to be armed to be a threat or a deadly threat to the officer involved. And when you have somebody who is having an excited delirium reaction, somebody who's already on mind-altering drugs, bath salt is one of the newest drugs that acts just like PCP. Some states have outlawed it. But others, it's still legal to buy. Here in my area, they changed one ingredient to make it a legal substance once it was outlawed. And what that did, it actually increased the intensity of the drug high. So the law was not effective. Excited delirium. When you see somebody exhibiting this syndrome, you're going to recognize it. Not only will they be going off, but they will have an attraction to glass. For some reason, they're attracted to mirrors, windows, and they want to smash them out. They will be overheating. They will be hot, even in the winter. They'll be delirious. They'll be talking about craziest stuff that you could ever imagine. This is not to be fooled with. It's not to be laughed at. It's not a joke. This person is in a life-threatening situation, and he will die without immediate interaction by EMS. But here's the thing. You can't get them that medical assistance until you get the person in custody. And oftentimes that entails using the taser, hog-tying him down, and overpowering him. I saw a video recently where more than a dozen, maybe even a dozen and a half police officers had to, after using the taser several times, they had to physically tackle this person who no doubt was suffering from excited delirium. And they had to beat the crap out of him even after he'd been tased repeatedly, until they could finally get him hogtied. The public doesn't understand what is happening. They just see the abuse. They just see the police pouncing on the person. You may not understand what truly is happening at that moment. Just because you work on campus, just because you work in an office building, just because you work at the mall, doesn't mean you're not going to be getting involved in these type of situations, because they happen every day across the country in every situation that you can imagine. So I want you to listen from a medical aspect, from a medical, clinical, so that you'll understand physically what is happening in these events.
EMS providers periodically come into contact with individuals exhibiting bizarre behavior. This behavior is often a result of alcohol intoxication, the influence of drugs, mental illness, uncontrolled anger, or any combination of these.
I'm not resisting. I want to talk.
In some cases, however, bizarre behavior may be associated with the serious medical condition called excited delirium. This is sometimes fatal.
Well, excited delirium is a condition that we've recently learned more about. Primarily, we learned about it because of the rise or the prevalence of death in custody subjects. What we used to be concerned about with subjects that were either being hogtied put into police officers' vehicles, either prone or hogtied. But then later, over time, we started seeing more of them getting tased and subsequently dying. And people were thinking, oh, it's the taser, or it was them being hogtied. Well, actually, as we began to study these subjects, we found that it was neither. It wasn't being hogtied, and it wasn't being tased. That we actually began to study the toxicology and the pathophysiology of these subjects, and we found out that these people were suffering a condition called excited delirium, that they were often high on crack cocaine or methamphetamines, and that they also had an underlying cardiac conditions, severe hyperthermia, severe hypertension, and so they were cardiac arrests waiting to happen. And so what happens is they're now in a position, because of the extreme struggle that ensues with law enforcement, and it's just coincidence that the taser or the hog tying that we had previously attributed to their death was just coincidental, because it was occurring at the same time.
Can I help you?
The term excited delirium was first used to describe the acute behavioral changes associated with the abuse of stimulant drugs like methamphetamine, PCP, and cocaine. It has become more widely used to describe any individual who is demonstrating a specific group of physical signs.
I don't know. It looks like he's on something.
Associated behaviors in excited delirium patients include agitation, grossly psychotic behavior, exhibiting feats of extraordinary strength and endurance, especially during attempts to restrain. Patients often seem insensitive to pain. Their ability to focus, sustain, or shift attention is impaired, and they are easily distracted. Speech is loud, rambling, and incoherent, and it may be difficult or impossible to engage the person in conversation. The patient may be disoriented in regards to time, location, and purpose. They may misinterpret perceptions of events in their environment. They may become delusional or experience hallucinations. And due to an elevated body temperature, many patients will remove clothing while still sweating profusely. Patients often exhibit violence towards shiny objects like mirrors and glass.
They're exhibiting animalistic behavior because their intoxication and their delirium puts them in a total animalistic level of activity. And that's why they're completely unable to reason.
I'm gonna get you out, get you some coffee pot, get
Delirium can be caused by several factors, including substance abuse of or withdrawal from stimulants, adverse reactions to or withdrawal from therapeutic drugs, as well as physical or mental illness. It's not easy to identify signs of behavior that are consistent with excited delirium, but they are very different than the often slowed, dulled, and inappropriate behavior of simple alcohol intoxication. Sometimes, other conditions do mimic excited delirium, including drug and alcohol intoxication or withdrawal, low blood sugar, overactive thyroid, pure psychiatric disease, dementia, sepsis, and head injury. So it can be challenging to differentiate excited delirium from other causes of abnormal behavior, but there are classic calls that should give you a good indication.
You'll get a call that, you know, from a hysterical mom. She came home, she found her kid just, he's paranoid, he's naked, walking around the room thinking he's going to die, he's very paranoid. They have a fixation about glass. Often you'll get a call for someone going through a neighborhood, breaking out windows with a baseball bat, and you'll think, oh, this is just, you know, hooligans and, you know, kids just, you know, gangs and stuff. But you get there, and a guy is naked. It's February, which is kind of an unusual call in St. Paul for a guy to be naked in February. But that's generally a good key, because the reason why these people are naked is because they're hot. They're already hyperthermic, and so they begin to strip, and so that's a key classic call.
If the situation is unknown and you arrive at the scene first and recognize signs of excited delirium, call for police and additional resources. It's important that law enforcement and EMS work together in an effective and coordinated way when dealing with a patient who may be suffering from excited delirium. Together, they can identify patients who are possibly in a state of excited delirium and manage the situation in a manner that minimizes the risk to all those involved.
All right, you guys are really cool guys. We're all going to help. We're getting them out.
Talking in the light.
They're not just simply intoxicated. They're not just simply wigged out. They're not just simply high on drugs. They're not just simply having a bad trip. This is an acute, life-threatening medical condition. They're not necessarily committing a crime, and that's the issue. And so we get, EMS often gets confused when they get into these situations going, well, you know, is this a crime? We're EMS. We're not law enforcement. It's not our job to decide whether a crime is in progress. In fact, it's not even law enforcement's job to decide whether a crime is in progress. Their job is to protect the public safety.
First responders typically take a hands-off approach when called for a violent patient, since they lack the training and tools to deal with these situations. However, sometimes you need to restrain and control a patient so treatment can begin, or because they become combative.
Why do you call these guys? Seriously? I don't need this. What are you doing?
He's going to put some seatbelts on you.
No.
What seatbelts?
If a patient you are already caring for becomes agitated and violent, you'll need to take steps to ensure the safety of you and your crew. Retreating from a patient who needs medical care is sometimes not an option. Several studies have confirmed that excited delirium is an imminently life-threatening medical emergency, and that the patient is already suffering severe medical problems before responders arrive on scene. They require immediate medical interventions.
EMS needs to be prepared to have enough resources to adequately restrain the subject, then rapidly begin cooling the subject, looking for other medical causes such as hypoglycemia, hypoxia, you know, rule out the other type of medical causes other than acute intoxication with methamphetamines. I mean, maybe this patient has a head injury. Maybe they're hypoglycemic. Maybe this is some other psychiatric condition. For ALS providers, then the idea is having at your disposal the use of pharmacologic agents to sedate these patients.
Violent behaviors and actions of an agitated state lead to a physiological response from the body, especially when trying to restrain the patient.
The most important thing is to minimize the amount of struggle. So for BLS, that's in the absence of having the pharmacology, BLS's role is going to be to minimize the amount of struggle, to then fight hyperthermia by the application of cool packs, spraying the patient down using fans, passive cooling techniques. If they have access then to ALS with ALS intercepts, then establishing IV fluids and volume resuscitating the patient, because we know that besides being hyperthermic, they're also acidotic, and that means that their potassium levels are elevated. And so we volume resuscitate them to try to drive their potassium levels down.
A physical struggle causes the body to release catecholamines. As they enter the bloodstream, the body pumps the heart faster and creates an increased demand for oxygen. The lack of oxygen causes the arteries to the heart to constrict, shutting down the blood flow and affecting heart function. After struggles cease, in some reported cases, a labored or shallow breathing pattern is noted, and then patients suffer cardiac arrest and die.
Unless this subject is a clear and present danger to himself or the public, let's just step back and take a moment, contain the subject, and let's just get prepared so that when it's time to restrain him, we're ready. And because what we know from our studies is that if these subjects go into cardiac arrest, we cannot resuscitate them. Unlike regular cardiac arrest, that if they suffer cardiac arrest in front of us, we start CPR, we can almost always get them back. These type of cardiac arrests, if they arrest, 100% lethality. They all die, because they are so acidotic, they are so hyperthermic, their potassium levels are so high that once they arrest, they all die. And so the key for our success in EMS is to prevent the arrest. And so the only way to do that is to pre-plan your attack and coordinate with law enforcement.
Under some conditions, it may be necessary to forcibly subdue a person, even one suspected of suffering from excited delirium. Police will often use tasers to gain control. In some cases, tasering has been blamed for excited delirium deaths, but scientific evidence to date is unclear. Considerable attention has also been paid to restraint use when controlling these patients. Again, there is no valid evidence that the way these subjects were restrained caused death by positional asphyxia. However, placing a patient in a prone position can interfere with diaphragm movement, so it is not recommended. EMS and police should work together to determine the best way to restrain or subdue a patient.
These subjects are often going to be placed into protective custody. And the whole concept of whether, even if the patient isn't agitated delirium, of patient restraint is one of medical legal concern for both law enforcement as well as EMS. And so this is a prime opportunity for both law enforcement and EMS to come together and deal with an issue that that is important for both of them and is important for the safety of the patient, and to develop a set of guidelines and protocols and train together so that they both have an understanding of what each other's role is, so that in that critical time, they're not fumbling over each other and they're good partners.
Almost all in-custody deaths result in some type of litigation and usually focus on the method of control. Positional and compressional asphyxia are terms frequently heard in courtrooms. Methods of restraint become issues of contention in a lawsuit and may be the turning point in the liability of an agency. Follow your local protocols for restraint procedures and consult your medical director for treatment of behavioral emergencies.
The problem has been what's the concern that's caused the death in custody is that law enforcement has failed to recognize that these subjects are unable to comply. And so when you watch the videos where there are deaths in custody and there is repeated use of the taser and then prolonged struggles, you'll hear them saying, comply, 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 quit resisting, quit resisting, quit resisting. And yet the guy's fighting like an animal. And everyone's, well, there's no surprise. And it's like, well, you know, you can say, well, this is an animal. And so I'm not sure that it's inappropriate to not treat them like an animal. And you get the on to them and you sedate them And it's very much like you would do with a DNR coming in if there's a bobcat in your backyard. And you contain them, you tranquilize them, and as soon as they're contained and tranquilized, then you transport them. Because you can't reason with them. You can't make that human connection with them. And so I don't know if that dehumanizes them. I think that actually probably expedites better care for them if you try to do that.
Once a patient is restrained or controlled, responders must maintain a constant vigilance of the patient's condition. A previously combative patient who becomes suddenly quiet should raise a red flag. Many reports of in-custody deaths attributed to excited delirium describe sudden calmness just prior to death.
And of course, once you have sufficient manpower on the subject, then you let off of the taser, and that's then when EMS comes in, administers the medication, and then it's a matter of just simply a light restraint, give the medication an opportunity to take its effect. And with a lot of these medications, and one that we've been using at Health East in St. Paul, it is called Geodon, which is one of the atypical antipsychotics. And we have had phenomenal success with the administration of 10 to 20 milligrams of Geodon intramuscularly. Within 10 to 15 minutes, these subjects are very compliant. Sometimes we'll have to add a little supplemental Ativan, but usually they're very compliant. Within 10 to 15 minutes, we can establish an IV and begin to hydrate them up and treat their hyperthermia and transport them to the psychiatric unit.
EMS care includes assessing the ABCs and applying oxygen. Obtain the patient's temperature soon as possible. These patients often have temperatures between 102 to 108 degrees. If hyperthermia is indicated, cool by misting and fanning, or by applying ice packs in the groin and armpits. Apply a cardiac monitor and pulse oximeter. The initial decompensation in these patients appears to be respiratory arrest rather than cardiac arrest. Aggressive airway management and advanced cardiac life support protocols at the onset of these symptoms might be life-saving. It's important to stabilize the underlying psychological and physiological problems as soon as possible. If the patient remains combative, consider the use of sedatives in accordance with your protocols. Consider the use of Versed via the needleless mucosal atomizer device. This allows for drug delivery with minimal risk of accidental needle stick to responders. Once the patient is calm and accessible, a blood glucose level check should be performed and an IV of 60 degrees Fahrenheit normal saline is initiated and infused.
Okay, that's about all the information that you need to understand the urgency of this syndrome. It's really more about recognizing what to do, how to do it. Oftentimes we see a situation and because of a lack of training or experience, we don't identify what's going on. We call it for something that it's not. We may not understand, and so we react inappropriately, maybe hastily, maybe too aggressively. Excited delirium also is similar to low sugar, somebody having a diabetic emergency, somebody having dementia, somebody who's having a stroke, or even somebody who's having some other physiological or even psychological emergency, and we don't identify it correctly, and we cause it to even become worse because we don't know how to handle it properly. I recommend that every person working in the private security, public safety, loss prevention field become at least a first responder, certified first responder, and CPR. First aid and CPR is great, but it doesn't go far enough. these days because you're out in the public. No matter what your assignment, you're dealing with hundreds of people all the time. And while some companies still want to try to hide under the fact that, well, we don't get involved in medical emergencies, we call 911, there's been a number of lawsuits over the last 4, 5, 6 years where security companies and their personnel have been sued and lost because of this very thing. It's important to have that additional training. This particular crisis is often exacerbated because they are acting out. They are acting crazy. They are posing a public safety risk. They may be in the middle of a mall smashing out store windows. They may be naked in the middle of your complex. They may be naked in the middle of the lobby at your office complex or your campus. And so rather than look at it as a medical emergency at that moment, we have to look at it as a public safety issue. We need to get law enforcement. We need to get him in custody before he hurts somebody or he hurts himself. So oftentimes, while this person is really having a medical crisis, albeit brought on by illegal drugs, we have to think of the public safety factor first, and we have to get him into custody. And oftentimes that really deals with having to use a taser, having to use OC, having to use baton, maybe even having to go hands-on, in a large group, as I stated moments ago, where about a dozen and a half officers had to take the person down because of his extraordinary strength. And so while we're wrestling and fighting and doing all of these other things, we're not thinking about the medical emergency. We're not considering that aspect because out of sight, out of mind. Right now, he seems like he's out of control. We need to protect people, so we have to do whatever we have to do to get him into custody. And then, unfortunately, when the person finally is in custody, we don't look at it from a medical standpoint. He's face down. He's handcuffed. He's hogtied. When a person is prone out, his diaphragm is crushed, and you have a much harder breathing. It's a labored breathing. After the person has been fighting with you, or been tased, and they've gone through all of that for 5, 10, 15, 20 minutes. It's like having worked out in the gym for 2 hours. They're already hypothermia. They're already in a situation where they're having a crisis, a medical emergency. And so now we have them in custody, and we don't recognize that the next step is to immediately get them EMS, immediately address that medical aspect of what's going on. Just this weekend, two different persons, one in California and one in North Carolina, died in custody of security officers, one at a nightclub and one at a retail establishment. Those are in custody deaths because they were both stopped and detained by security. And they wrestled around, and they fought with them, and they got them in custody. But after getting him in custody, they left the person on his face, proned out. They sat on top of the person. They wouldn't allow him to breathe. And they both died. One died right there on scene. The other one died moments after getting in the EMS ambulance. He was probably already dead before the paramedics got there. But it's our job to continue life-saving efforts until we positively can't go any further. So before putting him in the ambulance, he probably was already dead. The more security officers, whether they be campus or loss prevention or hospital or office, the more security officers get involved with responding to incidents, disorderly persons, trespassers, crimes in progress, the more we become the first responder, the enforcer, the primary officer, the more we're going to see these interactions with the public that are not going to go in our benefit. They're not going to go our way. Because every year, more than 100,000 workplace violence incidents happen involving private security. The more that we are getting involved, the more that we go hands-on, the more that we detain, the more that we stop and question, the more that we become that first frontline responder, we're going to be put in the positions where we have these situations, where we have these people in custody, legally and technically. And if we don't know what we're doing, we're going to cause people to die. In-custody deaths among law enforcement have been growing rapidly. Search it out on YouTube. Check it out on the web. Almost every other day, at least every 4 or 5 days, some agency is having an in-custody death because they've wrestled around with a suspect. They've had to use physical force. They've either used a chokehold or they've hogtied the person and thrown him in the back of the cruiser, and he's suffocated. In some cases, died on their own vomit. Because we didn't recognize that once we have the person in custody, it's our responsibility to make sure that they're okay physically, to provide them with that medical aid. So if you ever get involved in an excited delirium situation, or one that you suspect might be an excited delirium situation, the person is acting crazy. He's especially hot. He has a big attraction to glass. He's stripping off his clothes. He's disoriented. He's doing all these wacky things. Yes, he might be having a reaction to bad dope. He might be having a drug-related, drug-induced incident. And you might have to use some type of force. When the police get there, they might have to use the taser. And some security officers now carry tasers. And we're hearing more and more about those incidents of security personnel using tasers inappropriately because they're improperly trained. But if you ever get involved, the The number one priority is officer safety, your safety. And you might have to use force, reasonable, not excessive, reasonable force, whatever that might be. Unfortunately, sometimes these persons involved are so strong that officers do fear for their life and they use deadly force, even on somebody who's naked and running around the street with no weapon. But if a person is extremely strong and has the strength of the Hulk, sometimes you have no choice but to use deadly force. But if you're ever involved in a situation like this, once that person is in custody, your next obligation, your next duty should be to make sure EMS is notified. Make sure that they're called. Make sure they're on scene. Make sure that they do a thorough evaluation. Because then, if something happens to the person at the jail, at the hospital, at the court, at the magistrate's office, at the wherever, you're covered. And in part two, we will be talking about your responsibility, your duty, and your liability of any suspect that you have in custody. There's a lot of question in the security and even law enforcement community as to when do you technically, legally have a person in custody. You do not have to have them handcuffed. You do not have to have them in the back of your cruiser. You do not have to have that person locked up someplace to be in your custody. And in part two, we're going to go into the legal definition of when that person is in your custody. How to recognize medical emergencies. How to identify an acute, life-threatening situation. How to assist someone having an excited delirium incident. How to train for these type of events. There's a lot more to our business today in 2014 than there was in 1914 or 1960 or 1999. Things have changed. We have private security personnel running around with semi-automatic rifles, AR-15s. We have security officers running around in 28 states who have police authority, the same jurisdiction, the same police authority and arrest authority as any municipal, county, or deputy sheriff. Times are changing, folks, but with that change comes responsibilities and a duty to train and to understand, to recognize a whole array, a whole slew, a whole menu of laws, emergencies, responses, crisis. No longer can we say, oh, well, it's not my job. I'll just look in the manual if it ever happens. I'll call my boss if anything like that ever goes down. Realistically, you'll never have that opportunity when a crisis occurs to do any of those. In part two, we will talk about other types of in-custody deaths not related to excited delirium, but just as serious. How to avoid them. How to react, if you are listening to this training today and you take the follow-up training, we want to remind you that by taking a short exam, you will receive a certificate and certification in in-custody deaths. All that you have to do is contact our help desk at privateofficer.com. That will conclude our training and program here on the Private Officer Beat Radio for this Monday, the 3rd of March. We hope that you really understand that your responsibility as a security officer now is so much greater than ever before, and that you take it upon yourself to get the necessary training to help yourself and to help others in crisis. Until the next time, be safe, be blessed, and we'll see you back here on the radio. We'll be right back.